Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review.
Joe Biden will not come to Milwaukee to accept the Democratic Party's presidential nomination. The DNC is now a virtual convention, a disappointed Milwaukee mayor concedes. Tuesday's primary will set a record for absentee ballots cast. Which incumbents face Tuesday challenges? Kanye West for president? The controversial celebrity files papers to be on the November 3 ballot. And Governor Evers insists that he will let local school districts make their own reopening decisions. Rewind, your week in review for August 7th.
I'm Steve Walters. And JR, let's talk about, since March of 2019, Democratic National Committee, we thought convention coming to Milwaukee. Now it stands for Democrats not coming, with the announcement this week that former Vice President Joe Biden, and Democratic presidential nominee, presumptive, Joe Biden will not be coming to Milwaukee. Neither will any convention speakers. And this has been pretty amazing since they announced it in March 2019. Boy, that was all seashells and balloons, as the former coach used to say. 50,000 people coming, huge economic impact, everybody excited, scrambling to put people in hotels from Northern Illinois to Madison. But now, big setback for Milwaukee, no Summerfest, no Brewers home games. The Bucks are playing in Florida, and the loss of ethnic festivals. JR, as we watched the downsizing and continual retrenchment, this couldn't have been a surprise at Mr. Biden not coming?
No, it almost seemed inevitable in some ways. Now, the question that I have is, will Biden come to Wisconsin in some other capacity between now and November? If nothing else, for a symbolic visit to the state, because remember, 4 years ago, Hillary Clinton didn't visit Wisconsin after the April primary. Now, in talking to some Democrats, they'll tell me that that's a little bit overblown. The real problem is she spent more money in long shot places than she did in Wisconsin, and that was her real issue versus the visiting thing. Nonetheless, it's a symbolic thing of why they came to Milwaukee in the first place, right? Rebuild the blue wall, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, have a presence in Wisconsin. We're not making the same mistake we did 4 years ago about the upper Midwest. We are here to win it. So now what? There was a report out this morning or late last night that several members of the convention staff tested positive for COVID-19. I don't know if that was what was the final nail in the coffin for this, but there was a realization at some point in recent weeks that it was difficult, if not impossible, to pull off a safe convention where you weren't exposing people to this virus, which has shown no signs of, you know, going away, right? So now what? Look, to me, national conventions are kind of overblown anyway. They're just basically managing the message for 4 nights. They are staged from start to finish. There's occasionally some drama, like what Ted Cruz is going to say 4 years ago at the Republican convention. You know, would the Bernie people revolt at the convention? But really, it's about how do you present this kind of managed message for your nominee to a captive audience for 4 nights. Now, okay, they just have to do it differently.
Yeah. Well, okay. I don't want to take a lot of time on this because it's a long way off, but do you think Milwaukee has a chance of landing the 2024? And that's so far off, let's not spend a lot of time, but just your gut.
I've heard some Democrats say that this actually improves their chances of getting in 24, because even when they started scaling back, there was a call, hey, bring it back to Milwaukee in 24. Now they're not really coming at all. Maybe improves that chance, but that's such a long way away. Will Wisconsin even be a swing state in 4 years? Would a Arizona, for example, a Georgia, even a Texas, be more of an important swing state come 2024, because demographics are changing all the time, and what was important this year may not be important 4 years from now.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, now let's look at some of the reaction to that announcement. Let's consider first what Governor Evers said. One thing that hasn't changed is Democrats' commitment to putting health and safety first. It has never been more important for elected officials to lead by example. That's the kind of leader Joe Biden is. That's the kind of president we want. Joe Biden will continue to have a presence in Wisconsin. Okay, we'll may come back to that. Mayor Tom Barrett, I can't hide my disappointment. This is a 100% virtual convention. We cannot forget we are in the middle of a pandemic. And then, as you reported, it was politics. The criticism from the state Republican Party, let's read the Chairman Hitt's statement. Joe Biden has not visited the state of Wisconsin once this year and now is using coronavirus concerns as an excuse for his absence. Despite recent travels to other states, he would rather use the COVID-19 pandemic for political gain rather than lead the country. JR, that seems to be coming back to something that you hinted. How much, if any, will Biden return to Wisconsin between now and November 3?
Well, how much would be out in public in general? I mean, don't forget this week he stepped in it again, talking to minority journalists. So he has occasionally makes gaffes, and it gives fodder to take attention away from the president's problems, which are numerous. So for Democrats, there's this fine line of showing this guy can go out and campaign versus not taking the attention off of the president. Democrats want it to be a referendum on Donald Trump, period. Trump wants it to be a choice between him and Biden. They think that's his best chance. So we'll see. But, you know, and I ask people all week long, does Biden have to come to Wisconsin in some capacity between now and November, even if it's symbolically? And I got mixed message about that, so we'll see. It really is about your operation here, the commitment to dollars on the airwaves and what you do, how you treat Wisconsin. I don't know if make a visit makes or breaks Biden in Wisconsin, but they got to be more committed to here than they did to like the Omaha market in 2016 with Hillary Clinton.
Well, was it just yesterday that Mr. Biden's daughter, Ashley, was here in Madison with a Democratic state rep?
They're doing surrogates. They're doing these kind of like virtual events, those kinds of things. But again, that just that physical touch, having Joe Biden touch down in Green Bay, that's a big story for a day or two in the Green Bay market. I don't know if that, like I said, I don't think it's going to make or break his campaign, but it's something symbolically that some people argue that he needs to do.
Yeah. Okay. But DNC now stands for Democrats Not Coming. Okay. New subject. Tuesday's primary election. It's going to be a record. When you look at the numbers put up at 7 a.m. this morning by the Elections Commission, let me get them right. 892,411 applications for absentee ballots, 460,987 returned already. Those are records. Consider in 2018, in the 2018 primary, only 108,000 absentee ballots were turned back. And Elections Administrator Megan Wolfs has this warning. If you're worried that the Postal Service will not get your absentee ballot to your polling place, to your clerk, by next Tuesday, you should drop it off yourself or drop off your absentee ballot at the clerk's office, or, as I said, or at the polling place Tuesday. So, JR, when you look at the records, in April, we had 3.3 million registered voters. So that means one in four have already asked for absentee ballots. And before I give you a chance, just some of the numbers. One in three of those that have asked for absentees are from Dane and Milwaukee County. If you add Waukesha County, 42% of all absentee ballot requests are coming from just those three counties. I'm sorry, sir, your turn.
So you got to dive those numbers a little bit to really kind of comprehend what's going on. I don't think we're going to see, well, I would be surprised if we see all 800 some thousand absentee ballots returned by Tuesday. And the reason is that if you go back and look at how you can request absentee ballots, when you do it through My Vote Wisconsin, you can check a box that basically says, send me an absentee ballot for every election left this year. All right. So there's a theory that a lot of these ballots were requested by people who voted in April, the absentee, and said, give me all the ballots just in case, with their ultimate goal of voting in November via absentee. Still, the more than 400,000 returned compares to 600 some thousand cast overall in the August 2016 primary.
Yeah.
So what suggests to people I talk to is this continuation of the movement toward a more of a voters rely more on the mail to cast their ballots. The big thing is going to be November. And we were in federal court this week with a combined several lawsuits trying to see changes to the absentee ballot. Well, several procedures for the November ballot, including absentee ballots. The big questions I have are, how many requests are we going to have for the November election? Are there going to be changes to how, like, the deadlines to return them? Remember, because the federal judge overseeing those combined lawsuits basically said during the hearing this week that he doesn't think there's any way that if you wait to a statutorily imposed deadline of 5 days before the November election to request your ballot, you'll get it mailed to you and be able to return it on time via the mail. You have to drop it off in person and make the Tuesday, and that's going to be even a stretch possibly.
Yeah.
So watch that. Is there going to be a change to how the absentee ballots are treated come November? Remember in April, that same judge said you could have an absentee ballot counted as long as it received by the Monday after the election. Now, a couple of those orders were overturned by higher courts, but What's going to be the deadline for November, and when will we know the results? That's the big thing. And the president's already raising concerns about it, that we may not know, now in his words, weeks or months or years, we might not know who won that November election. I don't think it's going to be that far in advance. But it will be weird if, like, election night, we're sitting here going, okay, we have 97% of the precincts reporting, but we have X thousands of absentee ballots yet to be counted by the municipalities. What's the result? And that's going to be where the chaos might ensue come November.
Yeah, those are good points. Okay, we have 10 incumbents who are facing challengers on Tuesday. JR, Wisconsin, I had the good fortune to interview all but five of these 20 challengers. So let's run them down. First of all, in the second congressional district, Western Wisconsin, Democratic primary, Mark Newman, Ron Kind. You've reported that Kind is sitting on $3.1 million. Mr. Newman hasn't spent very much at all. Give me your short take on this.
There's not much happened at primary. The big question is if Ron Kind is going to be in a real race come November, but I don't expect to have much trouble on Tuesday.
Okay.
Now, don't forget, I mean, Kind's got issues with the base, the ones who like, you know, Medicare for All, who are a little bit different than on trade, but I don't see him having a problem actually in that primary.
Okay. State Senate District 3, the incumbent, Tanya Johnson and Michelle Bryan. Any PS on that, or shall we move on?
Interesting. It's kind of a proxy fight between Lena Taylor and LaTanya Johnson. There's been a beef there. Michelle Bryant is Lena Taylor's chief of staff. So watching that, I think LaTanya has an edge in that primary, but with all the absentee ballots we're seeing, it's hard to know like how low turnout we're going to have on Tuesday versus a normal year. So it could be a little different electorate than we're used to, but so watch that.
So that's a surrogate Taylor and Johnson grudge match, huh?
Yes.
Okay. Assembly District 9, Christian Saldivar versus incumbent Maricel Cabrera. Any thoughts?
The challenger got a little bit of like school choice money. So there's been some money spent on his behalf. And that district is a very low turnout district. That area of the city of Milwaukee is one of the lowest turnouts in the state. So it's hard to figure out again, because with all these absentee ballots coming are out there, if you do turn it back, are you a low information voter who doesn't really know who these people are and are voting in a different race, but check a box in another one? So how's that play? That's the kind of the big question about some of these primaries that I'm seeing. I can't quite figure out just yet.
Assembly District 60, Chris Reimer or Reimer versus Robert Brooks. I was sorry, neither candidate agreed to be interviewed by Wisconsin Eye, so I have no information on this one.
Brooks resigned his leadership position 2 years ago in the Assembly's UP caucus after making some inappropriate comments towards some female colleagues at an offsite event the caucus had. Won re-election, 2/3 of the vote 2 years ago anyway. I have not heard anything that suggests he's in any trouble in this primary at all.
Okay, Madison fight. Assembly District 78, Rob Slamka, Lisa Subek. Remember, the party tried to get Mr. Slamka off the ballot. Your thoughts?
I'm not hearing much that people think that Lisa's got any trouble with this primary, so she should be okay on Tuesday.
Veteran State Representative Sandy Pope is being challenged in the 80th District by Kimberly Smith, who I interviewed, who said that our current incumbent politicians are not doing enough to advance and close the racial gaps. That's what I remember from that interview. Anything else, JR?
Yeah, I also interviewed Kim Smith. Heard something similar. I don't know if that's enough of an argument to unseat a long-term incumbent who's been one of the leaders of the Democratic caucus on education issues for 18 years now almost.
Right. Assembly District 82. Theodore Kafas, Ken Skoronski, again, Wisconsin ISRI, neither one agreed to an interview. So any thoughts on that one?
When you're a challenger who's turning down free media, it tells people something about the quality of your campaign.
Thank you. Assembly District 89, incumbent John Nygren, co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee, being challenged by Andy Rich. Andy Rich made it clear, I am running because of the PFAS threat in this district. John Nygren says
PFAS is very complex. Took me a while to explain PFAS to the legislature. I did all that I could. Andy Rich said not enough. Any other thoughts?
Andy Rich's positions on a lot of issues, they line up more with the Democratic candidate than with the Republican one. So the people up there have been trying to educate folks that this is really more of a Democrat than a Republican in their kind of terms. So I don't think that Nygren's got a real challenge. He hasn't raised a whole lot of money. He's well known, so I would be surprised if that's much of a close race on Tuesday.
Assembly District 90, Christine Shelton, Stash Grzinski. I know we'll come back to this later. So any quick summary, knowing we're going to mention it later?
This is probably the most interesting primary on Tuesday because of the resources that have been put into this race by Assembly Democrats. I've seen Brzezinski's colleagues donating to Shelton. I've seen the Assembly Democratic Campaign Committee doing stuff for Shelton. You don't see that usually, but it's also a unique case because Brzezinski sexually harassed a Capitol staffer at a Madison bar after hours, so after work hours. So it's really kind of an interesting race to watch, and I'm not sure what the path is for Brzezinski to survive in this Me Too environment, but if he does and can win in November, it makes possibly a very awkward situation for that caucus come January.
Last one, Assembly District 98, incumbent Representative Adam Nalin is being challenged by Ron Ochoa. This is a safe Republican seat. Any thoughts?
I have not heard a lot of it. There's just been not been much buzz about it. I mean, of all the incumbents being challenged in these primaries on Tuesday, the only ones that have generated any kind of buzz are the 90th Assembly District with Stosh Brzezinski and a little bit that LaTanya Johnson, Shell Bryant race. The rest of them have been kind of duds so far.
Okay. New subject. Governor Evers has again activated the National Guard to work as poll workers on Tuesday. They also worked as poll workers, Guard members did, in the April general election and the May special election in the 7th Congressional District. I was intrigued. Elections Commission said to run a statewide election, we need between 25,000 and 30,000 poll workers, noting that many of them are retirees in their 60s and 70s, which are legitimately concerned about, the pandemic and COVID. Then the State Election Commission at midweek, and I haven't seen any updated numbers, said we are 900 poll workers short. The biggest shortages, Waukesha County, 123, Winnebago, 110, Brown, 88, Milwaukee, 86, Calumet, 71. Just kind of interesting. Guard members are not only doing COVID tests, relaying supplies, but now they're poll workers. Just your thoughts, JR?
For a huge factor in being able to fill slots in the April election, so they're going to be needed again, and I wouldn't be surprised if we need to get in November with the turnout that we're expecting for the presidential election.
Yep. Okay. Now, JR, you've been working this, so update us. Kanye West and four others filed as independents. You had to have 2,000 signatures and sign a declaration of candidacy. Let's just look at, I want you to come back to Kanye, but Kanye West, the Birthday Party, Joe Jorgensen, Libertarian Party, Howie Hawkins, Green Party, Brian Carroll, American Solidarity Party, Kyle Kapitke, the People's Revolution. But you're reporting that it's not for sure that Kanye's on the ballot. Please.
So look, the Elections Commission, so when you're filing to get on the ballot in Wisconsin, you have to file nomination papers with a certain number of valid signatures from Wisconsin electors, okay? For president as an independent, it's between 2,000 and 4,000. They are due by 5 p.m. This past Tuesday. A couple of issues. Number one, we all watched the person who dropped off Kanye West's nomination papers walk into the Elections Commission building, not the office, the building, just after 5 p.m. Red flag number one. As far as I know, and talk election lawyers, that is a hard 5 p.m. deadline in the Elections Commission office. So barring some unique circumstance that I'm not aware of so far, it seems that his papers may be late. That would be one way that they would be knocked out. Number two, the Elections Commission did an initial review of West's nomination papers. It found roughly 2,400 signatures with 2,000 needed. However, the commission's review assumes validity of signatures. All they're looking for are completeness. Is there a first name and last name? Is there a signature? Is there an address? Is the person in this district for an assembly or Senate campaign or in Wisconsin? They don't look for signatures that look like they have the same handwriting, the duplicate signatures, fake signatures, all things that I found when going through the nomination papers on Tuesday. I went through them on Wednesday. I found, for example, at least two people signed as Kanye West. Now, there might be two people in Kanye West in Milwaukee. I kind of doubt it, however. So you start to see there might be signatures knocked out because of those problems. What's more, if you are a circulator, you have to meet certain standards in terms of what you provide for information. There seem to be problems with those folks who circulate the nomination papers that could strike out all of their signatures. Now, I'm not predicting that they will be knocked out because what's going to happen is there will be a challenge filed by today's deadline. I'm pretty sure about that. There's maybe a small chance it won't, but I'm pretty sure it will. There'll be a challenge filed. What will happen is the commission will take that challenge and review the signatures challenged. The staff will make a recommendation to the full commission, which will then meet sometime after next week's primary and late August to say, okay, we're going to rule X. Is he on the ballot or not? then I will bet you money there could be a lawsuit, depending on what the commission does. So this is going to be some drama for a while. Makes the ballot. Does he impact the presidential race in Wisconsin? Right now, the polls aren't close, but it's August. There's time for that to tighten. But who does Kanye West draw, really? Is it really going to be a hit for Joe Biden if Kanye West is on the ballot? Maybe. You know, we just don't know. I don't know if he's going to campaign seriously, if he has a constituency. Like, who's going to vote for Kanye West come November? So there are all kinds of issues about this, all kinds of drama, and, by the way, all kinds of problems with nomination papers.
Okay, and pollster Charles Franklin, if you're listening, I hope you include Kanye West in the poll that you're going to release next Tuesday, Election Day. And I just have this P.S. So I went through 2016. We had 12 or 13 independent candidates on the presidential ballot in 2016, and they got more than 160,000 votes, 5% of the 2.97 votes cast. Now, most of that, I think 106,000, went to the Libertarian candidate, but ta-da, Mr. Trump won by less than 23,000 votes. So significantly, if Kanye West is on the ballot and he gets 10, 12, 15,000 votes, there are some major potential implications for who wins this battleground state of Wisconsin, right?
Well, possibly. There's also a Green Party candidate who filed nomination papers. That person could draw from Joe Biden. There's a Libertarian who could pull from Donald Trump. I saw a story today theorize that Kanye West could hurt Donald Trump. I mean, we just don't know. And the question I often have with third-party candidates is, the people who vote for that candidate, are they there because of that candidate? Or they say, I don't like the name two-party candidate, so I voted for him or her. The one example where I think Wisconsin politics last 20 years that it was clear that the third-party candidate had an influence on the race was 2000, but it was a 5,500-vote gap between Al Gore and George Bush, and Ralph Nader got 94,000 votes. Forgive my memory, it's been a long time. But that seemed to be one where Nader really drew people who would have maybe voted for Gore otherwise. But a lot of times, like the Stein voters in 2016, she got enough votes to really influence the outcome. But were they there because of Stein, or they vote for because they don't like Hillary Clinton? It's kind of tough to figure out sometimes where that line is for the voters of why they were there in the first place and if they really truly were pulled away from the main party nominees.
Yeah, I understand. But I want to come back to two numbers. Independent candidates in 2016 got 160,000 votes, and President Trump won Wisconsin by less than 23,000. Okay. Now let's move on. It's a week after the governor issued his statewide mask mandate. It's not yet been challenged, but at a briefing this week with the Department of Health Services, the governor was asked, why do you have a statewide mandate for masks and you're letting local school districts make their own reopening decision, a discussion he's had with Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald that we'll get into later. Let's listen to the governor's response, please.
Much of the criticism about your mask mandate early on involved people saying, look, this should be a decision made at the local level. You chose to do it on a statewide basis, yet with schools, you say the local approach is working. Can you talk about why you...
Sure, absolutely. The virus is every place in the state of Wisconsin. We have schools in every place in the state of Wisconsin. The difference is this. Is that all school districts look different. A lot of schools are small school districts in the state of Wisconsin where they already have small class sizes, or they already have the opportunity to keep kids physically distant. That isn't the case in every school district. And so it's really important. There's a distinction between the two. The virus is every place in the state of Wisconsin. It's taking a toll every place in the state of Wisconsin. School districts have different challenges and opportunities because of their size, the support from local folks, and listening to their constituents and taxpayers. There's a huge difference between the two. If I was somebody in Oakfield, Wisconsin, frankly, I wouldn't pay attention to the conversation between Fitzgerald and myself. I'd be paying attention to what the school board and teachers are talking about when they're talking about how school is going to look differently this fall. The vast majority of school districts and are involving their parents, their kids, their teachers, their grandparents, their taxpayers, in determining what the best route is for them. They're also, frankly, using local public health officers to help them make that decision. So that kind of conversation is going on, even with, even, I don't think anybody's out there kind of hanging on for dear life to determine what Scott Fitzgerald is going to say next about this. I think they're actually doing things in the local level, and I've been very appreciative of those efforts.
We reported last week that Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald would like both sessions of the legislature to come in and overturn this executive order. And we said that a week ago. JR, is that still his position as the number of Republican senators and Assembly Republicans issue press releases, we should overturn the mask order?
Oh, yeah. It's all about the Assembly.
Why the silence on the part of the Assembly Speaker, Robin Voss, on whether to bring back the ledge? Excuse me.
The governor's boxed in Assembly Republicans. So here's the dynamic I've been told, right? If you look at polling in Wisconsin in general, Republican brand has suffered in the suburban areas because of Donald Trump. The rural areas are still very behind the president. Assembly Republicans are looking at this saying, okay, our base wants the mask mandate overturned because their base is largely in rural areas, and then it had been in suburban areas too. The people don't like the mask mandate, really, really, really don't like it. And they're putting pressure on Republicans to overturn it. However, leadership looking at polls saying, okay, if we come in and overturn this mask mandate, we are gonna have people like Jim Ott in Menomonee Falls, Rob Hutton in Brookfield, Dan Canodal in Germantown, Jesse Rodriguez in South Milwaukee. They're gonna be in a difficult spot, and it makes their lives more difficult because the mask mandate is popular. Okay. The other thing about this is, closing schools is not popular. And Republicans have been saying over and over, they think that Evers' ultimate goal is to close schools. He's getting pressure from teachers' unions on this because there's some concerns about whether it's safe to go back to teach in person. The thinking is, if Republicans come in and overturn the mask mandate, then cases spike. It gives Evers political cover to say, okay, look, I have to close schools because they overturned the mask mandate. If we just wore masks, we'd have got this thing under control, but now we're not. So I got to do this. And you can pin the blame on Republicans. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I'm just saying that's one of the thinking, part of the thinking behind what's going on. And oh, by the way, Fitzgerald could be more aggressive in his position about the mask stuff because, yes, he has suburban Republicans, but their suburban districts are more red than the Assembly ones. Think about it. Like, if you have an Alberta Darling, yeah, she's got some suburban areas in Milwaukee, but she goes out into more conservative territory, much like the Dewey Strobel.
Right.
Whereas Hutton's, they have those kind of true suburban areas where the Republican brain is suffering, and it puts a more difficult position politically.
Yeah. And just two more points on this before we go to your stock picks. At least 11 county sheriffs have said our deputies will not enforce the masks. And when the governor's chief lawyer, Ryan Nielsen-Stuhn, was asked about that, he said, yeah, but individuals can still file complaints with their local district attorneys, which I don't know that that's a practice. We don't have any evidence yet that filing complaints with DAs is widespread. Okay, let's go to your stock picks, sir.
So rising the 2020 gubernatorial campaign, I know we still have 2023 months away, but Rebecca Clayfish last week announced Rebecca PAC, which is gonna help Republican legislative candidates this fall. And talking to people since that announcement, I will bet you money that when Rebecca Clayfish announces her initial list of endorsements in sometime likely next year in her bid for governor, a lot of those names that she gave money to will show up as supporters of hers. So the jockey is already going on for the 2022 gubernatorial election. Now, big linchpin is Ron Johnson. What's he gonna do? Run for a third term in US Senate, run for governor, or stick to his pledge of two terms in Washington, go home. So once that happens, lots of people are gonna fall into place about where did Mike Gallagher go? Where does Kevin Nicholson go?
Paul Farrow, Waukesha County exec.
I think his interest has dropped sniffling the governor's race.
Okay.
From what I've been told. But Eric Hovde, don't forget him. He's out there. He ran ads about the governor's stay-at-home order. So
okay.
There's already – so basically what I'm telling you, Steve, is November 4th comes, the 22 race is already on the day after the 2020 election.
Yeah, got it. Okay. You got 30 seconds for mixed and falling.
All right. Lobbying. The beat goes on. Even though we had a pandemic, the beat goes on. We dropped somewhat a little bit. Groups spent $15.5 million to lobby the Capitol in – first half of this year versus 17.5 in the same period 2 years earlier. It just shows you that there's a dent in what happened because of the pandemic, but you never stop lobbying the Capitol no matter what.
Well done. Okay, falling.
So Stash Grzynski, so I alluded to earlier, but the ADCC has now spent more than $80,000 on in-kind contribution to help Christina Shelton. I have never seen a legislative campaign committee spend that kind of money on a challenger of an incumbent. Now, difference here is that Stash was booted out of caucus, essentially, stripped his committee assignments. But 2 years ago, Josh Zepnik had been accused of kissing two women at political events against their will in 11 and 15. He was challenged by Ernesto Cabrera, but he didn't get help, or she didn't get help from the ADCC. I asked, what's changed? What's changed, what I can tell, is that the caucus got somebody say, hey, I'll give you money if you'll go after Stash. So there are resources being spent against him. It's a difficult path for him right now, but I've never seen this kind of help for a challenger against an incumbent by a legislative campaign committee.
$80,000 by an assembly campaign committee against one of their members. Okay, looking at next week, we, of course, have great fun going through the results of the primary. We will have Charles Franklin Poll, and I'm sure we'll have some other news. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for August 7.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.